we're starting now.
Okay, we're starting now. Welcome to the Ebony Ditch. This is a very special episode that we're recording while we're driving to Colossicon East. That's why it probably sounds like shit. So y'all are just gonna... Well, if you guys have already listened to the two ones, Final Fantasy ones, where we had audio issues...
This is gonna be better than that.
I gotta make sure I'm still following directions. I'm gonna get so hyped up talking about Omni Slash.
It says right here that we are 306 miles on this
just
road.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think we're gonna be okay, actually.
I think we're good, actually. Okay. Yes. Hi. This is Alyssa. I'm the one driving. Christy's in the passenger seat, and we're driving to Colossicon East, where we don't have any panels because we're dumbasses who missed the panel application window by one day.
Literally!
Which is about par for the course for our character.
Yeah.
That sounds about right. Queer failure. And, so today... We're driving. We've been driving already from Ann Arbor to the Poconos Mountains in Pennsylvania. It's about an 8-hour drive. We're about 3 hours out from Ann Arbor, 5 hours out from...
Sorry. Oh, my God. Yeah, hold on. I'll go.
Haley, we're recording the podcast. Stop talking about. Do you want this podcast to happen or not?
We're also going to visit Haley.
Yeah.
Hi, Haley.
Oh, my God, it's so hot in this car.
I know. Let's just talk fast and focus on Omni Slash. Okay, so this... For a while, when we were starting a podcast, we were like, we should just record episodes when we're on our long road trips, because...
We never shut up on them.
Yeah.
We have good conversations.
We never shut up, and some of our best conversations happen while we're on the road, and every time it happens, we're like, fuck us for not recording this. So here we are. This is our road trip episode.
And But because Alyssa's driving, we can't look up anything.
Yeah.
And I've got car sickness if I read. If I look down for too long in a car, I will get car sick. So you're getting a pure, unadulterated Carlissa with no...
We're both
no
very
references.
Sober.
We're
very sober.
We might be sober. That doesn't mean that we are eloquent in any...
Yeah.
Anyway. No, you are. I'm not sure about me.
That's true. Oh, so we figured we've got 8 hours to do basically nothing except talk to each other about Final Fantasy VII.
Which sounds like a great time, and I'm still...
Yeah, it would have happened whether or not we were recording a podcast. So we brought the microphone into the car, and we have it, like, rigged up to my rearview mirror or something. Oh, look at that Spider-Verse billboard!
Oh,
I love this!
Oh,
so cute!
Oh, I'm gonna cry!
Oh. Spider-Verse billboard. This is the great part about doing a road trip episode, is everyone just gets our commentary on the shit we see on the side of the road.
Yeah, this is Belmont Avenue!
Belmont Avenue!
Belmont! Oh my god.
Oh, thinking about Genya Ricardo.
Oh, I love Genya Ricardo.
Me too.
Oh my god, I should stop texting Haley and instead fucking do this
it's
podcast.
Okay if you text Haley, as long as she doesn't text us back. Fuck Haley. Let's start, I guess. We figured we have nothing else to do, so why not make this one of the biggest episodes that we've been wanting to do? Which is the Omni Slash episode.
Woo!
The episode where we talk about Omni Slash and other related Final Fantasy VII things. Because there's a fucking lot to say about Omni Slash.
In 1 mile. Exit right.
I guess we should slap a big old content warning on this.
Yeah, that's what I was holding. Give me 2 seconds.
Okay. Yeah, you're the major vocal proponent of this theory.
Yeah,
so,
I'm sorry.
Of course, I love it too, and I'm going to talk about One Winged Angel.
Hell yes. Okay.
All right. Huge fat fucking content warning on this episode.
Unwrap our snack wrap.
Yeah, okay, so when we say that we're talking about Omni Slash, I guess what we really mean is that we're talking about the entire, narrative of
Final Fantasy
VII. So with Cloud, and namely Cloud and Sephiroth, but other stuff too. But, yeah. So that should, give you an idea right off the bat. I'm sure we'll list, you know, all this in the description, too.
It's 0.1 miles.
It's gonna
turn
be,
left. And then,
that's really,
turn left.
That's gonna be the biggest, content warning, really. This is the episode where we talk about rape a lot. This is
turn
the rape
left.
This is the rape episode.
I can't
left.
Say that. Oh, that's the thing, too. Because of our, the way we, do our stuff and what the stuff that we will be talking about.
Puppy. Oh, it's so cute.
Oh, there's such a cute puppy. Oh, catch your little head out the window, buddy.
Oh. Aww. Okay, proceed.
Yes. Because we talk in such a frank manner, too, so just a heads up that not only will we be discussing at length sexual assault, we will probably be quite frank and forward about it.
Yeah. We're just gonna straight up talk about it.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm already, like, nervous. I'm like, am I gonna be able to, like, make myself say some of the shit with you being recorded? I'm so self-conscious about this stuff.
This material isn't gonna jive with everybody, but that's fine.
Yeah, and,
perfectly fine.
It's very, important to me, personally. I don't know, this is, like, my stuff. Mm-hmm. And I get that it's not for everyone, so yeah. Mind the content warnings. I'm sure we can do fuller ones once we've written this whole thing.
Yeah, once we've written this
we've
whole
written
thing
the
out
podcast.
Loud, what is commonly referred to as speaking.
Fuck you. I'm Stone Cold Sober. Yeah, this is your first introduction to Stone Cold Sober, Christy, and she's about the same, apparently.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Yeah, though, I don't even, like, know where to jump in with this, because I feel like jumping in right to OmniSlash, which is the sort of culmination of everything, that's not really a great place to start.
Yeah. Oh, God.
How far back do we have to go?
We have to go really far back.
We do.
You want to talk about what first made you start thinking about Final Fantasy VII as a rape narrative?
Like,
started, like, the possession step?
Yeah, yeah, that's really where that sort of,
that's
begins.
The beginning, really.
And so. I have been, like, waiting for it, because everybody, like, was doing a hint, hint, wink, wink. There's gonna be some, rape narrative content in there for you, Christy, and I'm like, what? Because I'm a stupid fucking idiot.
Yeah. So let's start out talking about the Sephiroth possession. Yeah. And, maybe a little bit about, oh my God, what was I just gonna say? About the beep room.
The beep room.
Inn,
yeah! Fuck yeah, the beep room.
Intrinsically tied to that.
Yes, absolutely. God,
oh boy.
There's so much. Oh, jeez.
It's pretty overwhelming.
It is. It's very overwhelming, but it's very exciting, too.
Right.
Like, I forgot what I was going to say. I get so excited that I get off track.
How about we start out talking about possession? As,
yeah, just the very concept.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, actually.
You're
thank
welcome.
You. Thank you.
Not even directly connected to Final Fantasy VII,
just
but
by
the idea of possession as a sexual assault, like, storytelling tool.
Oh,
really,
yeah, for
dates
sure.
Dates back to, like, Gothic literature.
It's very hard to do any sort of possession story without a sexual assault angle to it, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously you can play it up and play it down, but there is an inherent
in a quarter of a mile,
angle that you can
right.
always bring to that. God, it's so fucking hot in here.
I want to speak up a bit to get over the noise.
Oh, okay! I'm sorry if I was talking too quietly. That's not usually a problem that I have.
Yeah.
I usually have the other problem. I can't tell the volume of my own voice at any given point in time, so I'm very, very sorry. Yes, though. Yes. I don't know. Do you want to talk about possession in, like, classic literature and shit? Because you're really good at, you
okay,
know,
hold on.
That.
Let me finish this bite of my snack wrap. Stall for time for me.
Okay, right.
Well, this is pretty basic shit, but probably not for everybody who wasn't an English major in college, I guess. I never know what's basic shit anymore.
So just say shit and just go with
so
it.
Yeah, so let's just say shit. Let's talk about how the entire Gothic genre of literature, you know, the idea of ghosts and darkness and shit, living in ancient houses, all of that genre, you know, good old Henry James, Turn of the Screw.
Fuck Turn of the Screw.
Frankenstein, the Castle
of Otranto. Yes, Frankenstein.
Castle of Otranto, I think, was the first book to really fall into the gothic literature category. Still haven't read that one, but
they've all got some sexual assault themes going running through it for sure.
Oh yeah, because
it's very gothic.
Yeah, this was one of the first sort of pseudo-Freudian literary genres to emerge, where people just were like, oh, we can't talk about sex, and also we're terrified of it, so what if all sex was ghosts? What if there were, like, supernatural beings who lived in our houses, could come into our bedrooms, and take over our bodies, like, literally enter into
got fucked by a ghost.
Yeah, I just think that's interesting.
Yeah.
And, like, 9 times out of 10, the protagonists of these stories would be young, vulnerable, waif-like women who would be like, oh, I'm dying. I'm going to faint because a breeze blew through the window.
The ghosts.
on account of the ghosts raping me. Like I said, we're very frank about this stuff.
Yeah.
We're not joking about the act at all, but it's,
it's one of those things where you were, well, again, we're frank in general, but you know, if we don't loosen up, we'll be crushed under the weight of living as lesbian women in our society.
Yeah. and so the gothic genre
autistic,
really,
too! Wow!
Yeah, the gothic genre like, really exploded as an exploration of sexual repression.
Which is also why, it's, well, a theory why, rape kinks are so, common.
Oh, yeah,
among women,
that's important.
Is sexual repression.
Yeah.
So if you don't like it, it's okay, right? If you didn't want it, it's okay.
It's a way for women to be frank about their sexuality and fantasize about a position where, like, I didn't choose to have sex with this person, therefore I'm not a slut.
Yeah.
Since any time...
And then you don't have to be consciously thinking that either.
No.
You probably aren't.
This is all really subconscious.
Yeah.
Since, you know, as soon as a woman expresses any sort of sexual agency or desire, it's like, wow, I'm probably just a fucking whore. So,
yeah.
But I still need to express my sexuality somehow. So if I was, you know, taken advantage of by somebody, then I could express that desire but not be blamed for it. Which does not translate at all, of course, to actual cases of rape.
But that's why fantasy and reality are two different things.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a well-documented phenomenon and has been for decades, so...
So for all of you out there who are like, I have a rape kink and I feel really bad about it, don't. But I know you still will, but work to overcome it.
So does the vast majority of the AFAB population.
Literally, like... The lowball number is already, like, in, like, the 60%.
Yeah, over half, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, that's very lowball because most people won't admit it either.
Yeah.
It goes up if you word it differently.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
This has been documented for several decades.
It's nothing new, nothing amazing. Which, also kind of explains my, in part, explains my interest on the whole.
Basically, the entire gothic tradition and this notion of ghostly, otherworldly possession of the body has already emerged as, like, an exploration of female sexuality and especially the horrors of assault. And so even if it's not conscious, the fact that the trope, the idea of that emerged in gothic literature under that pretense sort of grants that sort of potential reading to any story that comes after the gothic genre.
Absolutely.
Basically.
Like, okay. Update on that scenario. Don't worry, you guys.
So, that basically sets us up. That's,
right.
That's,
what is, I mean,
that's the general concept of possession as a rape trope, if you will.
Yeah.
It's been around for decades. It will be around for decades still.
Yeah.
We talk about it extensively in at least one of our panels. Mm-hmm. Probably more that I'm not thinking of right now, but one we especially specifically put it in there.
Oh, that's like all I talk about in the life.
I know. whenever you've got a presence, a ghost or otherwise, sort of taking over the faculties of either a woman or a feminine coded character's body.
Yeah.
It tends to carry those implications. Not to erase, you know, male rape victims at all, but I'm speaking classically, you know,
yeah.
in terms of how literature was presented. That's how it is.
Classical literature, common societal perceptions.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, I think, a lot you can do by working, by utilizing those, you know, preconceived notions of society.
Yeah.
You know?
And plus, like, the whole possession thing was one of our first forays, I think, into me and you reading Cloud as a feminine coded character. So it's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy in that way.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, that Cloud is a feminine coded character other than his obvious appearance. But that obviously, him being really feminine doesn't happen till the, you know, later half of the game when he's himself again. We're heading Pennsylvania!
Pennsylvania!
Oh! We're in Pennsylvania! But anyway, yeah, though. So, obviously, though, a good chunk of the game involves Sephiroth talking to Cloud, possessing Cloud, forcing him to do things. And often, there's a really, really, there was someone did, like, a little comic talking about game mechanics.
In our group chat.
Yeah, in one of our group chats. Doing
that
a comic about, oh, for sure, about game mechanics, and even how the game mechanics lean into this, too, and make it even more striking, about how as you lose control over Cloud, as Sephiroth gains more control over Cloud, and what you're able to do as, you know, once Sephiroth really kicks it into high gear, you know, you will have, like, control of Cloud, and, like, you can, like, struggle against Sephiroth.
Mm-hmm.
And in the comic, though, the person, like, worded, like, the buttons that you use to, you know, do different things, like, what are the actions as, mm-hmm. like, struggle, submit, and resist.
Yeah, that was,
And I'm like, well, you really hit the nail on the head
with that one! Sexually coded way of describing those actions.
Which is accurate, because
that's
exactly how it is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
For sure. And I was always, your like child Cloud is like watching, and you like
control. Oh my
control.
God, that fucks me up so fucking
bad. It's so
bad.
Fucked up. You control like Cloud's actual body is moving. Sephiroth has total control over Cloud's actual body, and you are in control of like Cloud's like real personality,
like
as which is represented as a ghost child self sitting there watching it helplessly, and you can only like run around and like struggle.
Yeah,
and that's all you
watching
can do
from the outside.
Yeah, it's like, basically, it's like total disassociation. It's like, it's a perfect disassociation.
Yeah.
Visual metaphor for disassociation,
mm-hmm.
really well. Especially because, again, there, Sephiroth has full control over Cloud.
Yeah.
And he just can only sit and watch. And the fact that they do it with child Cloud as he's sitting, so you know it's the real Cloud, too, which is also the feminine coded, you know,
mm-hmm.
all that, really. By having it be child Cloud, having it be his real self that is watching everything.
So I think the three scenes where that really kicks into high gear are the bee broom and honeybee inn.
Yeah.
The scene where he gives Sephiroth the black materia, and the scene where Sephiroth's about to kill Aerith.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that fucked me up so bad.
Oh, man.
Remember
when he lost the first time and I was like,
hey, I want to do it this time? And I was like,
yeah.
Okay.
Once we realized that it was, like, an interactive, like, game experience, we had to redo the cutscene over, and I was like, let me do it this time. Let me control Cloud. I want the experience.
Dude, when I was doing it the first time, I, like, screamed. I was like,
I know.
No! Oh, my God! Oh, it's so much. And I kind of, I mean, this is probably getting into way off the rails territory here, but I mean, I kind of talked about it too, where it's like, okay, the target audience for a JRPG is probably going to be young men, and I almost wonder if there's this feeling for, you know, cishet, presumably,
mm-hmm.
men, playing this game where they feel like they're fighting Sephiroth for control of Cloud.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, non-men will be more like, I'm fighting against Sephiroth personally.
Yeah.
Like, identify with Cloud more personally.
Yeah, this is, like, tangentially related to that, but I'm reminded of that conversation that we had with Haley where she was telling us about, what was it, one of Rags' sons or someone was playing, used to playing, like, Western games like Red Dead Redemption and stuff where, like, the character, the protagonist is an avatar of you.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And wasn't used to playing, like, JRPGs where you're not the character that you're controlling. Like, you're playing through a story yourself. And he was really, like, surprised and confused by that because he was so used to more, like, AAA Western games where...
Which are definitely more masculine-coded across the board.
Where, like, your character is a reflection of yourself and you have such a degree of control over them and their personality and their actions, things like that. Whereas with JRPGs, you're forced to follow one specific storyline. And the character has a certain personality already ascribed to them.
Yeah.
That changes, you know, whether
and
or not
then actually, I mean, they really work with that in FF7, too, because, like, they start the game sort of with this sort of, like, masculine, like, kind of, doesn't talk a whole lot, sort of masculine, like, image that you can, like, he doesn't really, you don't know much about his past or anything.
Yeah.
And you can kind of project yourself onto him. You know, and then as the game goes on, you know, as it turns out, you know, Cloud has had his own personality all along. In a sense, Cloud's true personality coming back is also bucking off the presumed cishet dude player as well, which is also, again, the cishet dude player and Sephiroth fighting for control over Cloud versus Cloud and Sephiroth. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a, entitlement? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a certain sense of entitlement, I think. It's kind of hard to say as two not cishet male gamers who aren't used to playing games like that.
Yeah, for sure.
But I think it's a pretty common sentiment.
This especially also works, too, because the player... tying this to Omni-Slash here. Omni-Slash, which is a very important moment for this entire arc and story and reading of Cloud's story. Omni-Slash, as soon as you press the button to use Omni-Slash, Cloud leaves your control and you don't control him again for the whole rest of the game. And that's truly him. Because, and we're going to get into this more later, Omni-Slash is essentially, you know, Cloud sort of like freeing himself from his, the burdens and, pain and trauma and of Sephiroth and of this rape narrative. And in doing so, he's also cutting off himself from the player, like I mentioned, because then you no longer have control over Cloud after that. He's already, his real personality's already come back, but now that he's, like, accepted everything and settled things with Sephiroth and basically hit the conclusion of this imagine it's a I say that it's like a rape and revenge story if it was rape and revenge stories were actually done well like they should be.
Because
I have a great fascination for the idea of rape and revenge stories and I love them, and unfortunately most people who make them are cishet dudes who are dumbasses.
They're just exploitative.
They're just they're sexploitation films. You know, that sort of shit. But, you know, I feel like Final Fantasy VII takes those ideas and, like, makes it into something.
Because they don't do it, like...
Yeah.
They almost don't do it intentionally, but they do, but they don't.
Yeah, it's more...
It's not their first intention to make a rape revenge story.
It's PG.
Yeah. And we talked about this before when we were driving to the State Fair, but one of the reasons I really love Omni-Slash is that, you know, it's technically possible to get Cloud the ability to perform Omni-Slash in battle before the very end of the game. But it's, like, very hard, and logically on your first playthrough, at least, you shouldn't know how to do it.
And you shouldn't do it!
You shouldn't do it. It's extremely hard to get it, so chances are that you'll finish the game and see Omni-Slash for the first time at the very end there when he uses it against Sephiroth. And when we talked before, I compared it a lot to the end of Persona 3, where you have the, what's the move called?
Great Seal.
The Great Seal.
Minato pointing up in the air.
Yeah, when the Persona 3 protagonist chooses to sacrifice themselves at the end, and you have the move Great Seal pop up that has never been seen before in the game and doesn't really carry any real explanation.
It's other just than there, and you're like, fuck.
Yeah, it shows that it will absorb all of the protagonist's HP, but doesn't exactly narratively outwardly, you know, it doesn't forthrightly tell you that this means simply, that they will sacrifice themselves.
But you know. You know, you see that, and you know.
Mm-hmm. And so when Omnislash pops up when it hasn't before, it's one of those instances where the game is almost turning and looking you in the eyes and saying, this is a video game. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is a piece of software that's made by people who aren't you, and it's fundamentally out of your control. And at this point, we're telling a story, and the thing that will make our story at this point is introducing this mechanic. And so, introducing Omnislash. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I feel that as strongly as you do, because I tend to get really immersed personally in things.
Yeah.
And then I tend to think later about, like, the meta of it, you know, and be like, it's meta is something that I, like, deeply appreciate and really like, and I do like to think about it, but it's something that doesn't strike me usually while I'm playing it.
Absolutely.
Unless it's very outward, like I'd say, like the text adventure segments of Nier Replicant.
Yeah.
It's that part that strikes me.
Games that are games sort of.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. I love games that are games.
Yeah. Games doing things that only games can do.
And I think that's subtle enough that I don't really think about it till later. Like, it wasn't something that I thought of in the moment.
Oh,
like,
neither did I.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it now.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm stupid. All right, I'm dumb. All right, I don't know why I assumed that. I'm very dumb. But yeah, no, totally, for sure. It's a games that are games moment. It's where the narrative intersects with the gameplay perfectly sort of thing. It's like the absolute, you've got, you know, narrative and gameplay can, like, it's where they, one of those moments where they cross over.
Exactly.
The story that is trying to be told and the gameplay itself hit at a perfect intersection at a place like that.
It's really, it cuts off the player's involvement and control over the story as a whole.
Yeah.
By introducing Omnislash at that last moment, where you as the player, if you haven't played it before, don't completely understand what it's going to do.
And I also think that, I don't know, how to put this, I don't think Omnislash, well, I would never use Omnislash. Why? Because I don't think it exists, my big thing.
Really good.
I also like it just sort of appearing like that, too, because it's one of those things that just happens because it needs to happen, and that's it, you know? I don't know how else to explain it. It's magical realist in its own way.
Yeah, that's exactly
something just happens because it needs to happen, and that's what Omnislash is. So when I talk about that, I'm like, I don't think Omnislash is a real move that Cloud can actually use. I think it's just his own mental representation of this, you know, this weird, magical, realist, fucking, livestream Sephiroth fight thing.
This is one of the worst traffic jams I've ever
seen. Yeah, wow, we are looking,
this
we're not in it, we're just passing by it, and it's,
oh, shit.
It's nauseating.
Jesus Christ.
There's so many trucks in it, too.
Yeah, that's what makes it extra intimidating and gross.
Gross.
Aren't you glad that we're over here and we're not over there, and they're there and we're here and they're
Cloud
there
looking
and
at
we're
Sephiroth.
In here?
Cloud looking at Sephiroth in the like pod thingy before he hands on the black materia.
Yeah. No, that was like
that was
when
sexual.
We were playing when we were playing through the very end of FF7 for the first time, and you know, you beat Safer Sephiroth, and then they have the transition to where Cloud and Sephiroth are going to have their real final showdown.
And you think it's going to be a big hard thing
in the mind void, or you know, however you want to say it. I was like, because we beat Safer Sephiroth pretty easily. Yeah. Like he wasn't the
It was a decent length fight, I think.
Yeah. But it was more just whittling down HP than anything. Right. I didn't really have any difficulty with it.
Yeah, so I was
seven's not an overly hard game. Yeah. So
I was like, when they entered the mine void, I was like, oh, this is it. Like,
yeah,
this is about to be it. Boy, they about to do it. And then as soon as you think the battle's going to begin, only one option shows up.
And it's just like,
Omni-Slash.
Fuck!
There's no fight. There's just Omni-Slash.
That's
and
fucking
Sephiroth
awesome.
Has his shirt off, and Cloud just takes the Buster Sword and just
goes eight.
Wails on him. And the zoom in on Sephiroth's face where he looks...
You're not even gonna... Sorry.
What?
No, never mind.
What?
Never mind. No, it's fine. I was just, like, eager to say shit, that's all.
Okay, go.
No, keep going. About the look on Sephiroth's face.
It's good.
I know, I'm just being dumb.
Okay, go.
I forgot what I was gonna say now, so...
Are you sure?
Yes.
Okay.
I forgot what I was gonna say. I'm like... I was just like...
I know that we're already kind of on... I guess we're already on Omni-Slash right now.
We're going chronologically out of order, but whatever.
I'm just gonna... We should just break down Omni-Slash. It's really, like, the best way to approach it, because each part has... All of it has so much to it. I think because, you know, that feeling where you go to it like, oh, shit, this is gonna be the real final battle... and then it isn't. Feels very similar to me in a similar way to, but different. I don't know how to put this. Metal Gear Solid 4 ends fight.
Yes.
And I don't want to spoil it for anyone who hasn't played it. Ends with a fight, though, that basically is a big criticism of all the hyper-masculine, macho, like, last battle, one-on-one things. It's a criticism of it, and it's like, look at how pathetic this is.
This is fucking stupid.
Yeah, it's stupid, it's pathetic, it's just old men who are just... have
falling
no
apart
reason to
on
fight.
The verge of death.
And they're fighting because that's the only thing they know how to do.
They're literally just keeping each other alive through their sheer will to fight each other alone.
And it's pathetic.
It's fucking pathetic. They're both crippled old men who are falling apart, and by the end of the fight, they're barely able to lift their own bodies. And it's just
they're lifting each other up. At
yeah,
parts.
They're like helping each other to
while they're
fight
fighting
each
other. Yeah,
to continue the fight. Like, it's just, it's futile. There's no winner. It's fucking pathetic. And that was the entire point of it.
So Omni-Slash, the thing is, with that final Sephiroth fight, I'm like, they set it up like it's going to be the sort of fight that MGS4 was criticizing. This, you know, macho one-on-one thing. And then it's not. You just use Omni-Slash and that's it. Uh-huh. And that's awesome. As if to say, like, basically Sephiroth is arriving doing his homoerotic, you know, posturing, macho posturing, shirt's fucking off. He's like, hey Cloud, I'm gonna drag you down one last fucking time. And then Cloud's just like, nah, you don't have any power over me anymore, is basically what that says. Instead, he doesn't indulge Sephiroth in this fight.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't have to do that. You don't have any power over me. Fuck off! And that's, you know, that energy that Omni-Slash brings. And I mean, we gotta talk about shirtless Sephiroth.
Oh,
already.
Yeah.
That's something in and of itself.
Why is Sephiroth shirtless? if not to validate our theory.
No, it's inherently sexual.
Yeah, I mean, he's half naked.
He's not like that at any... I mean, he is, like, naked, but he's in the little pod thing. But, like, he took his shirt off to fight Cloud.
I think that if they had been able to get away with it in 1997, Square would have made him full naked in
the
Omni-Slash scene.
Oh, God, that would have been awesome.
Right?
Oh.
Remake,
please! You don't have to...
Sephiroth, any requests?
Yeah,
lose the shorts.
How are they gonna get away with modeling Sephiroth's entire wang?
Oh god. I mean, they've already done it. His dick is canonically huge.
It's true.
Have you seen his Dissidia model?
Oh, I have. It's
out there. It looks like a fucking codpiece, but it's not.
It casts a shadow.
It's his whole ass dick. And
his whole
it's
ass
like
dick
it's
just
protruding through all of Dissidia, which checks out.
Which checks out
of Dissidia.
Yeah, from everything I know about Dissidia, it's just Sephiroth making an innuendo at Cloud. So that really checks out.
Yeah.
which also makes all of this check out even more.
Yeah, it checks out.
Anyway, Sephiroth should be fully naked in the last fight.
I agree.
This is my headcanon now.
Yeah, I think Sephiroth should be fully naked during the Omni-Slash part.
Well, because that's also how it's set up, is that literally Cloud's, like, sort of, like, going through the live stream, and it's, like, there's, like, a good chunk before, like, he sees Sephiroth, where he's just sort of floating through the live stream, and he looks almost kind of peaceful doing it.
Yeah.
And then Sephiroth is there, half-naked, waiting for him with this, like, fucking smirk, and then it cuts to Cloud's face, and he has this, like, look of fear in his eyes, and then it's back to Sephiroth, who's like,
which is so much.
It's so much, and then back to Cloud, who's got this determination then, mm-hmm. and then he goes into the fight.
Right.
Yeah. It's so much. It's that the cuts between Cloud and Sephiroth, and also the very end of the actual Omni-Slash, right before Cloud does that final hit, the final slash down, it cuts from Cloud to Sephiroth's face really quick before that. It's awesome.
It's intense. It's a personal experience.
It really is.
They're not conveying a lot with words there. They're really not.
Sephiroth waiting in a state of undress for Cloud, who immediately has this, like, fearful look on his face the second he sees him waiting there with his giant-ass sword and his shirt off. It's just, it's horny, it's uncomfortable, it's terrifying, it's great, I love it!
It's fantastic, we're right.
It's fantastic, we're right. But anyway, so you got all this set up, though, right? And, again, because Cloud has been being possessed and controlled by Sephiroth. And not only that, though. Here's the thing, though. He's not only been possessed and controlled by Sephiroth, he's also was imprisoned for, like, four years, I believe? 4 years?
Yeah, 4 years.
Yeah, he was imprisoned and experimented on non-consensually for 4 years.
Yeah, let's talk about post-experimentation, which is adjacent to possession in terms of rape narrative.
And he was, like, the main subject because Zach didn't respond to anything.
Yeah, Zach didn't respond.
Which is interesting, too, because then I feel like they're putting a sort of a typical masculinity onto him by having
Let's gender the Sephiroth juice.
Yeah, let's gender the Sephiroth juice.
My favorite snack, gendered Sephiroth
juice. Gendered Sephiroth juice. That's unfortunate. I don't think that's what's... Well, Hojo doesn't care what Sephiroth wants.
No,
Sephiroth looks at his non-binary child and is like, I'm gendering your juice. Sephiroth just... Just knowing that Sephiroth could snap Hojo like a twig gives me deep satisfaction.
God.
As he should.
Basically any sort of bodily violation plot point can easily be read and probably should be read as a rape narrative
in most
cases.
So the fact, though, that Cloud not only has this Sephiroth possession thing, which is, you know, also has dripping in horniness just innately. I mean, you've all played the game, you've all seen stuff outside of the game, you've seen Advent Children. It's really fucking horny.
We were all in fandom circa 2005.
Everybody knew it was a rape narrative, but they could only express it by being like, yaoi rape.
Yeah.
It was still baby steps into actual thought.
I didn't play Final Fantasy VII till this year, but I can tell you, when I was like 12 years old, 2005, I was 12 years old, I knew vaguely about Final Fantasy VII. I knew Cloud and Sephiroth was a huge ship, but specifically in the like typical yaoi grim dark rape court kind of way, and so I wasn't expecting the actual game to go that hard, because back in like 2005 to 2007, everybody's yaoi ships were like, what if they were raping each other and it's like really dark? Even, you know, characters that would never do that, people were like, but what if? And that's just how fandom,
that was how Fujoshi culture was in
the mid-2000s. And then I fucking played the game. I was like, oh, they were right, actually.
This
is one of the few cases where the Fujoshi were actually right.
Sephiroth is pretty much a rapist, unfortunately. I love him!
We fucking love him so
much. I love you, Sephiroth! And that's, I feel like it does sort of put you in Cloud's shoes, too, because Cloud does have some genuine fucking sympathy for Sephiroth.
Oh,
but
yeah.
He also fucking hates him at the same time, for rightful reasons.
For sure.
I mean, it's more crazy that he has sympathy for Sephiroth, you know, than anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like Sephiroth as a character, you know, because he was a fine and normal guy, and, I mean, he was a little weird.
As far as his circumstances go.
I mean, his circumstances are what doomed him.
Yeah,
so.
He pretty much came out as normal as he could have to a certain point.
Yeah, I mean, he was definitely not a bad person.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Sephiroth's not, like, a horrible person.
He had friends.
He was fucking, and then he just, everything got really bad all at once,
yeah.
And then he just kind of lost it.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
Oh.
Sad.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, you know, there's a, the these two things can exist within Sephiroth, and, you know, dealing with them is, it's heavy.
It sucks.
It's intense. Yeah.
It
and
sucks.
It's good storytelling, the fact to have a character
fantastic.
Like this, who is like, oh, no, you genuinely love him, and also he's the rapist of the rape narrative.
He is valid. And he's wrong.
Yeah. That's exactly what I'm saying. Sephiroth is valid.
And wrong.
He's wrong. I mean, who, what gay among us doesn't feel some sort of kinship with Sephiroth
oh,
in
yeah.
some way, you know?
For
so,
sure.
Pass
me my fries.
No.
Please.
Why?
Why?
They're probably, like, cold now.
Well, I'm going to keep them from getting any colder.
All right.
Put them between my thighs. All right. Fry time.
Anyway,
they're cool.
Yeah, what a surprise. I got distracted by gendered Sephiroth juice.
Let's talk about gendered Sephiroth juice.
Yeah, no, we should talk about gendered Sephiroth juice.
Yeah.
I talked about it
talk
a little
about,
bit in, during Heinel Fantasy,
we should,
I know.
Yeah, we should talk about the
I
little
mean,
parts of Cloud's narrative that are, you know, somewhat separate from Sephiroth that reinforce
yeah.
the entire game as a rape narrative.
Oh, I'm absolutely... That was my intention because I want. That's
there.
Why I was talking about the laboratory stuff in general.
Yeah.
Because I think it's pretty wild that you would not only have a possession narrative, but also a non-consensual experimentation
yeah.
narrative that's... going. So I'm like, you have these two things, and I'm like, how can it not be a rape narrative when you have two classically rape narrative coded things
mm-hmm.
going on at once? I'm like, this is a lot. I mean, it's a lot to have happen to
yeah.
Cloud. So it's like, holy shit.
Shall we talk about what we mean by a gendered Sephiroth juice?
Yeah, we probably should talk about what we mean when we say gendered Sephiroth juice.
Oh, boy. I think this one was your theory, so do you want to take
yeah,
it away?
Yeah, about Genova and
yeah.
all that. Didn't I talk about this on Heinel Fantasy, though?
Did you?
I feel like I did.
Just give us a quick rundown.
Yeah, no, because the non-binary Cloud stuff.
Uh-huh.
That stuff about Cloud responding to the Genova cells because
yes.
he's not a man,
yeah.
coded, you know.
Yeah.
And then Zach didn't because he's
Zach is the masculine ideal.
Because Zach is the masculine ideal, which is also why Zach somehow manages to kind of escape the worst of the rape narrative part of the experimentation, because he was pretty much deemed a failure pretty damn quick.
Yeah.
Because,
narratively speaking.
Yeah. So, it's interesting. And especially, and then with Zach, you know, rescuing Cloud, too, you've also got the sort of hero thing
yeah.
going. He seems more like a, you know, like a battered masculine hero
right.
who's been humiliated than a Cloud, who's sort of, it's like, the right narrative is the whole thing,
yeah.
you know?
And, you know, Cloud, when he's done with the experiments, is completely helpless.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
despondent. He can't move. He might be at least some degree of conscious, at least near
I
the end.
I think it's implied that he started to regain consciousness with when Zach died.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Well, right before Zach died,
yeah.
Because
yeah.
he tried to reach out.
Yeah.
Okay, I gotta go. I gotta be going.
Yeah. Crisis Core, he would make, like, little sounds and stuff when you talk to him.
And he made sounds and stuff,
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same as he was, when, he washed up.
Yeah.
After the Northern Crater incident. And
mm-hmm.
he's Mako poisoned again,
yeah,
basically.
Again.
So, Mako poisoning.
Mako poisoned.
Again! because he's very susceptible to it.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Hmm.
Gendered
Sephiroth juice. Gendered
Sephiroth juice. Yeah, though. That's...
You want to talk about the beep room?
I would love to talk about the beep room. Or are we just going to jump right from that to the
beep
room?
I mean, I'm just thinking about little things.
Yeah. Sorry to, like, narrative. I feel
eventually,
so bad.
Eventually, I want to come back to Safer Separate so I can talk about one week.
And then there's definitely a few more things to say about Amislash too.
Yeah.
So then we can go from that to that.
Yeah.
All right, we should talk about the beep room.
Because
I know that we were going to, but then we didn't. We're going to last episode and then we didn't. Fucking didn't talk about the beep room.
Yeah, we just had a realization. We forgot to talk about the beep room!
I love the beep room.
Me too. It's also my fucking mind when I found out about the beep
room. The honeybee and has you go in, right, and you pick which room that you want to go in, and the one is literally
in the sex hotel.
The sex hotel with the there's a room that is censored that is just
it's
the beep room,
the censored room.
Yeah, with four. It's got four.
Yeah,
four
it's like
little,
the one, the dollar sign, and sign, at sign, like classic comic strip censoring. It's the censored room.
It's the beep
it's
room.
It's like, what the fuck does that mean, Square?
And then you say you go in there, and Cloud goes over, and then there's a Cloud. Another Cloud, the real Cloud, so to speak, a vision of the real Cloud curled up on the floor.
And there's weird
there.
Sounds playing.
Yeah.
And doesn't the screen, like, go, like, a red tone?
I think so.
Yeah. It starts, like, kind of flashing in and out.
Yeah. It gets, like, really weird. Like, the visuals get weird.
Yeah.
And Cloud's like, who are you? Why are you here? At him, his real self, basically, that's curled up, like sitting, just curled up. In the corner of the room.
Yeah.
And then he blacks out.
And then he blacks out.
And then
he wakes up on the bed with, like, the big macho gay male honeybee end figure trying to, on top of him, trying to slap him and wake him up. And
it's all very, you know, it's all very, like, you know, doing the little, like, it sounds like they're fucking thing.
Yeah, yeah. When the screen is black, it does the one of those fake-out things where, like, they just put the sounds that, like, Cloud and the other guy are making, and it sounds like a sex thing. And, but then you wake up, and it's just the guy on top of him hitting him. But it still looks like something is going on there.
Yeah, it's very...
And
something could have gone on.
Yeah. And, there's a honeybee and girl there, too. And she says, like, oh, I'm sorry about that. Some adult things were going on in here. And then she gives you a pair of panties for your trouble. She gives you lingerie.
Which is just...
For which, apparently, like, the honeybee inn is full of, like, abandoned data and, like, plot points and shit.
Yeah, you were saying you were looking into that.
Yeah, so a lot of the things that remain, like, Cloud... receiving the lingerie and being able to get makeup put on stuff, people... theorize that those used to be things that the player could do to increase Cloud's chances of being chosen by Don Corneo for his partner that night instead of Tifar Aerith. And that doesn't really determine that anymore, but you're still able to do those
it.
Things
yeah.
and receive those items. So Cloud just, like, walks into this room that, like, nobody knows what's going on, and he sees his younger self curled up in the fetal position in the corner.
It's not even his younger itself. I'm pretty sure it's not the baby Cloud there.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure it's just a image, you know, double image
of
him.
There's, like, a dissociated version of himself curled up in the corner.
In the beep room.
Yeah, he expresses not understanding who he is or what's happening or what his true identity is. Then he wakes up with a guy on top of him, and the girl says, there's adult things happening here. Take some lingerie. Like, what?
What?
What? He fucking... There's like, the sirens that play whenever Cloud disassociates that play in that room.
Yeah.
And then he fucking passes out.
Mm-hmm.
What does this mean, Square?
I'm not saying it's the rape room,
that's
but it's
the
rape
thing.
Room.
It's one of the many parts of FF7 and Crisis Core that only makes sense if you read it as that sort of narrative.
Absolutely.
Every time we have these theories, I'm like, we can't do this. Like, we can't
have
this theory.
Same. I'm like, I can't say these things.
Yeah. Or there's no way that this was ever intended. It doesn't matter if it was intended or not. But then I look at this, I'm like,
there's no way this wasn't intended. How else are you supposed to read it?
Yeah, I am trying to find another way to read this, and I fucking can't. Like, what the hell? God. I love the beep room.
I love the beep room so much. I could. I'm gonna start foaming at the mouth. I'm gonna bite you and give you rabies, and you're gonna have to drive. But you've got rabies. I don't know. I don't know what else to say. I'm just feral.
Isn't the guy who was trying to rape?
Shit. Fuck.
I'm sorry. guy who was trying to wake Cloud in the beep room.
What's the difference?
I mean, yeah, at this point, what's the difference? Isn't he the same guy that's in the other room that Cloud can go in where he, like, takes a bath with a bunch of men?
Oh, yeah, he gets a hand job.
Yeah, it's implied that I think it's the same guy that guy gives him a hand job in the bath.
I haven't looked into it myself, but I should.
Yeah, he just, like, starts taking a bath with a bunch of macho, like, oil gay dudes and, like, maybe gets a hand job from this guy.
Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah, Cloud.
Put that in the remake! I want to see him get the hand job in the remake!
All the gay experiences surrounding that part are absolutely fascinating.
Square didn't have to give Midgar, like, a canonical gay scene, but they did for some reason.
And it's shockingly good for 1997.
Yeah, it's not worst.
It's honestly, it's better than a lot of stuff I've seen in recent years.
Oh, same. We've regressed, for sure.
I think about the gays in Persona 5, and then mm-hmm. I think about the gays in fucking 1997, fucking Final Fantasy 7. I'm like,
Did way better back then, huh?
We've regressed.
We have. Thank you, 9/11.
It's September 12th. We just passed it. Thank you, 9/11. Aww. Soundbites taken out of context.
Please don't dox us. Please don't dox us for this entire episode.
We are sarcastically thanking 9/11 for its censorship and the great downturn in this nation's media literacy.
I mean, of course, this world has only ever been, every time we have progress, there's always, like, a big wave of conservative backlash.
Yeah,
not to be cynical.
I hate it.
Not to be cynical here, but...
Oh, mountains.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow, it's so pretty out here.
Yeah. I love driving in this.
Why can't
area?
We be from pretty nowhere? We're from the Midwest, so we're just in shit.
I mean, we're
nowhere.
Still in the Midwest, but we're
yeah,
in boring Midwest.
Yeah, we're like Michigan, Ohio Midwest, mm-hmm. which is just boring plains and
nothing
corn
there.
And racism.
Welcome to Pennsylvania Wilds.
Pennsylvania Wilds. You see, that's like a real we don't even live up in the sand dunes or anything in Michigan. Fucking shit.
Can you check the battery life on the laptop?
No. Quick? I think it's fine.
Okay, cool.
Alright.
I just wanted to make sure we were all good.
Okay. Do we have anything?
We have my laptop sitting in the back seat and the microphone rigged up to
record
this.
It's literally leaning against my cloud wig right now. Which is...
It's good.
Okay.
I set it up.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
There's actually.
I worked extremely hard on that. There are hours of work in that.
I know. There's a bag between the laptop and the wig that's like keeping them separated.
God, you're so smart.
I know.
Her brain is huge, and so is her meat.
It's true.
Anyway, though, is there anything else about the beep room, Honeybee Inn?
No, I think that's about it for me. I love the beep room.
I love it, though. I'm like, guys, remember the beep room? I'm like, okay, now go play Nier Automata. Now take the two pieces and put them together. All right, okay.
I connected the two dots. You didn't connect shit.
Oh, that's connecting shit.
I've connected them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Oh, I know what else I wanted to say. Mm-hmm. I think the Honeybee Inn is kind of funny in and of itself because this is... unrelated to the rape narrative, mostly. This is more about the queer shit. It's
fuck
just
yes.
The fact that the Honeybee Inn definitely entices players to go in with the thought that they're going to see, like, sexy girls, and then it's just a bunch of extremely gay experiences are the only things you can have in there. And I, for one, think that's amazing. And also reflective of, you know, Cloud's true self, you know?
Yeah.
You're expecting one thing, and it looks like it's going to be one thing, but on the inside, it's completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And on the inside, it's just gay.
It's just gay.
Cloud, there are two wolves inside of you. One of them is gay.
The
other
is
gay.
You are gay.
Four clouds flicker in season one. Wow, Final Fantasy VII is awesome, and I love it.
Masterpiece.
It really is. I gotta say, though, Mako Poison Cloud is also... There's definitely some interesting disassociative feelings about that. About the times... The times where Cloud is Mako Poisoned are directly after very specific, large events of...
Sephiroth encounters.
Hojo.
Kind of, yeah. Hojo is,
you know.
Sephiroth.
I was gonna say rape narrative encounters.
Yeah, so same difference.
Because he gives... It's you know, giving the black materia to Sephiroth once and for all.
Mm-hmm.
which is sort of which is also at the point where he has totally given up to, and he just sort of lets Sephiroth use him as a puppet, which is.
A lot of things.
It's a lot of things.
Fill in the gaps yourself.
Fill in the gaps yourselves, friends. There's that, and then after 4 years of non-consensual experimentation are the two times that Cloud goes totally, catatonic and totally just out of it. I mean, it's I'm sorry for what I'm about to say. It's mind break.
You know, that validates me because,
it's mind break.
As soon as you were about, as you began this train of thought and you were like, also, Mako poisoned Cloud is kind of, and my mind was like, fetishy?
Oh, it is?
And then he went a different direction. I was like, oh, I feel really ashamed of myself now.
Oh, no, it doesn't.
But, you know, I'm not ashamed of my fetish for Mako poisoned Cloud, honestly. I'm not ashamed of it.
I wish I had more of a fetish for it, but the trauma hits a little too hard for me with Mako poisoned Cloud for me to be fetishy about it, so instead I just get really emotional about it instead. But I can also appreciate it. From a, I appreciate it and I like it, but it's just like hard for me to be fun with in any way. I cannot be fun about Mako Poison Cloud.
Yeah, you can't have my tier of a fetish.
I really can't. That's just my own personal bullshit though. So, not to talk more about trauma, personal trauma on this fucking podcast.
That's what it's for.
I either overshare or undershare. There's no in between. Cloud strife. Mako poison Cloud. It's mind break.
It's mind break.
It's mind break. Let's be real. I mean, those are the two points at which it happens, and I don't think that's a coincidence.
Yeah. Talk to the mind break connoisseur here.
You see, it's not that kind.
I really just said that out loud in our podcast, didn't I?
Oops. Anybody listening to this podcast probably knows who we are and what we like.
Yeah.
The thing is, here's the hint, guys. If you are really into something academically, you are also have it as a fetish. That's just how it is. If you devote that much of your life to something this specific and weird, you're also going to jack off to it. That's just how it is. Or maybe you jack off to it, and that's why it's become your academic chicken or the egg, whatever.
Yeah,
Sephiroth egg. Sephiroth laid this egg.
Sephiroth laid this egg. Whenever we talk about that, I will never forget that paper I read by that woman who was studying female ejaculation, and she went to this artist's set, and this artist was doing a whole photography series of women squirting, and it was . The author was a lesbian, and she was totally fucking into it, and she loved squirting herself and her partners. And then she wrote an entire academic paper about the politics of female ejaculation.
Boom, being there single. It is!
And it's what the fuck? And that was the most, that was the greatest example of intersecting personal pleasure and academic pleasure that I've seen. Because it happens to us all the time, especially in fucking sex and gender theory.
I usually feel...
We're all gay.
And I usually just end up feeling really guilty about it, personally.
Yeah.
I'm like, why am I jacking off to the same shit that I am writing about with such serious fervor?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, no, that's why I'm jacking off to that.
That's how it works.
Maybe that's why I'm studying it. I don't know.
Yeah, that's why we have BDSM scholarship and shit. Who knows it better than the people who are practicing it? And the people who are practicing it probably like it, and that's why they're doing it.
So.
And that's in turn why they're studying it academically. It all comes full circle.
Thus the serpent consumes its own tail.
Life do be like that.
Safer Sephiroth time?
Safer Sephiroth time.
Safer Sexeroth. From last episode. Two episodes ago? I don't remember at this point. That's the downside of doing of most of the podcasts that we've done thus far, doing it really stoned, is that I don't remember which one I said what on or what I said. I'm like, what? I don't remember this one.
Yeah.
That's good.
I don't remember this one well.
And then maybe that's why we had to We have to do Omni Slash in here because this is something I'm really passionate and crazy about. And I'm like, I want to remember this.
We have to remember it. We have to be totally cohesive.
Okay, I'm passionate and crazy about all of this. Yeah. Also, it's delicate. I feel like, even though we're very not delicate people, but we need to be out there and say enough that, like, guys, I swear to God.
Yeah.
Just because we might not seem delicate doesn't mean that we're not delicate. This is our own personal language of delicateness that we have crafted.
It might not make a lot of sense outside of our own circle of each other, but
whatever. I don't care.
Just burping on the podcast.
Did I just burp?
No, I did.
I was like, I didn't burp. I didn't hear you because I was drinking water.
Me burping as I'm about to talk about Safer Sephiroth.
Sephiroth!
God, I wish I wasn't driving so I could pull up my entire Twitter thread.
Do you want me to go find it?
Well, I won't be able to read it
Is
the thing. I guess, it could be like a landmark to make sure I'm not forgetting anything.
I think we'll be good. I think I can help with that. If I don't go searching on Twitter again, I might get car sick.
And then, true. Okay.
I have to stare out the windows or otherwise I get car sick.
Yeah. We're still talking about the rape narrative in FF7, but we're going to go back to the end of the game to save for Sephiroth and talk about One Winged Angel specifically.
And why One Winged Angel is specifically a Save for Sephiroth song and for Cloud and Sephiroth. Those chosen by the planet is Sephiroth's actual theme, not One Winged Angel.
Yeah, but everybody considers One Winged Angel.
Because it's a banger.
Yeah.
And it's incredible. Banger. It's an incredible fucking song.
Yeah.
But half of why it's so incredible is totally in the theory and in the examining it and what emotions it stirs up.
Look,
you know,
PA-69. Nice.
Nice.
Wait, it says 68.
It's 68.
Oh,
fuck off.
I fucked up.
Sorry, got me all everybody. Excited for nothing.
Sorry, everybody.
No 69.
Look at those purple things.
Oh, those are. Wow. They're like big dowels.
Right? But they're purple on
But
the
they're
end.
Purple on the end.
I love it. What a nice color.
It is.
Hell yes.
I like your weird metal.
I like your.
I was
using metal
dowels. I'm like, I think they're like rods.
Rods.
I don't know.
Is that a rod?
Me looking at Sephiroth.
Is that a rod?
Looks at Sephiroth in Dissidia. Looks at his pants.
Is that a rod? Well, every time I'm about to discuss one of my own theories, I find every way to delay it and distract from it.
All right. Well, you have to because this is awesome.
Okay.
When you came home and told me about this, you remember how feral I went? I went insane when she told me about all these thoughts.
Okay. I was at work one day listening to One Winged Angel.
Like on repeat.
On repeat an obscene amount of times.
As we all should do.
And I was like, oh, I have a theory about One Winged Angel now in respect to FF7's rape narrative.
And I went on all fours.
Yeah, except I'm not even talking about the lyrics to it exactly. I'm talking specifically
about... The lyrics are all very Sephiroth.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, Sephiroth personal struggle.
Talk about rape narratives being presented indirectly as hell. I'm talking about the first several notes of One Winged Angel. Matt, can you insert this into the podcast, like, right here?
I was going to play it on my phone, and then I was like, wait, no, let's
just
do that.
We just edited it. Matt, put in the
psycho motif.
Put in the psycho string right here.
Guys.
Yeah. When I came home to Christy and I was like, I have a theory about these notes specifically, as soon as I played it, she knew exactly where I was going.
And I lost my mind. I'm like, this is the greatest day of my life.
Basically, the first, like... violin strings are pretty much ripped straight from Hitchcock's Psycho, as we probably all know, but Uematsu himself in an interview said that he took those notes straight from Psycho, the movie.
Which makes it all the more
which I didn't even know about until I had already thought of this shit, so I was like validated as hell.
Fuck yeah.
So those notes, those iconic notes that are pretty much recognizable to anybody in the pop culture zeitgeist, I guess, to be super pretentious about it. come from the scene in Psycho, the infamous shower scene, where the woman is being stabbed. Suddenly the shower curtain is torn back, and, you know, the guy with the knife is there, and he stabs her and kills her in the shower. And at that moment of terror, you have those violin notes playing. And that scene basically changed film history forever. Like, yeah. People have done entire documentaries on that scene, written entire books. Like, it's fucking insane. I really admire film buffs for shit like that.
Oh, that's really good.
I love it.
Anyway, just think about the cultural... Oh my god, that's gorgeous.
Right?
Wow. Think about the cultural context, though. That the fact mm-hmm. that this scene has such a... specific sexual assault coding yeah. energy, indirect, you know, that it's widely talked about in the public consciousness, yeah. you know? It's, and to have those notes in the final fucking battle against Sephiroth.
It's similar to how Jaws made the general populace afraid of sharks.
Yeah.
That scene from Psycho is what taught us to be afraid of showering alone, basically. Everybody had this idea in their head that when I pull back the curtain, there's going to be a guy standing there ready to kill me. It heightened the vulnerability of showering, basically. And even, you know, when Psycho first came out, and it's been talked about since, how heavily, like, rape-coded that scene is, basically.
I mean, the sexuality of the scene is shocking.
Oh, yeah.
For what it was.
It's very, very, very narrowly skirted around the Hays Code censorship that was, you know...
Which we're all about, is yeah. skirting around the Hays Code.
Skirted around the Hays Code. That was, you know, imposed on movies at the time where you could not show even a hint of nudity. It very, very narrowly skirted around those to be able to portray, you know, the woman naked in the shower. And then you have the guy who rips the shower curtain open and, you know, just starts fucking wailing on her with a knife, which is already pretty much the most phallic and sexual and assaulty way to die in a horror movie.
Amen.
Again, going back to the gothic genre of vulnerable women having their bodies violated against their will. It's just overall a scene that's like embedded in the cultural consciousness as a pseudo rape scene, and at the very least an expression of, you know, female vulnerability to male forces, even if you don't want to take it to the extreme of sexual assault. And when I was thinking about those notes in One Winged Angel, it was very interesting, because obviously, the whole thing is, you know, it's a final boss.
Yeah.
Save for Sephiroth, his final form is intimidating as hell. But it's never scary.
It's definitely not scary.
It's beautiful, really. It's all Christian imagery, and it's
angelic, literally.
Yeah, it's angelic.
Other than his grotesque wing on
yeah,
his one wing.
It's got some monstrosity to it, but overall, it's not a scary form or anything.
Yeah.
And the situation.
It looks
in
like
general,
it would be generally would be something more of a benevolent figure.
Yeah.
Ordinarily,
the final boss in general, it's not a horror like atmosphere, and so the use of the psycho motif seems at first glance like kind of incongruent with the rest of the scene. Like, why would you specifically bother to put those notes in there?
Yeah.
But then you think about how personal that scene in Psycho is, the confrontation between the vulnerable naked woman in the shower and the man who is trying to kill her.
I love this so much.
me too.
Sorry.
And you have to think to yourself, you know, how are those feelings from Psycho, the movie, being echoed in this scene between Sephiroth and Cloud? And it really speaks for itself, I think.
Uh-huh.
It puts a very, you know, even though the...
It puts
the
you
whole,
in Cloud's shoes.
Yeah, exactly. Even though the whole party is there and it's like the cumulative final boss where everybody's fighting together, it speaks specifically to Cloud's fear of the situation.
Uh-huh.
It using those notes from Psycho, those strings, you know, it exemplifies Cloud's vulnerability in the situation, and the uh-huh. specifically sort of naked in the shower vulnerability, the sexual assault vulnerability,
yeah.
Of confronting somebody who
I think
wants specifically to harm you, in even more so in the original movie, in such an intimate space as
yeah.
your home. which is, you know, analogous to the body in a lot of horror movies.
Yeah.
It all comes full circle. It puts a very personal spin on Cloud's fear and vulnerability that otherwise isn't really echoed in the scene. And it relies on your knowledge of Psycho to convey that concept in that moment, which is fucking awesome.
Yes. It's absolutely amazing, and I love it. Fucking, and when you're creating something off of something that's already been created, has some queer energy to it in general.
Yeah. And Duemaster himself said that One Winged Angel was an experimental track, and he was kind of surprised that it was the one that everybody latched onto and loved so much.
And it's because it was experimental, because it took risks. It's a song that was a risk.
Yeah,
it's a song
that
was strange.
Out.
It's a risk, it's emotional, it directly really tied itself to the game. It reflects so many things and the emotions of those things specifically. Mm-hmm. And again, that exact push and pull between Cloud and Sephiroth, and it's because it's the culmination of that. Mm-hmm. And that's what you figure at this point too, because you're not expecting the Omnislash bit, right? Which is also interesting, I want to say though, is that Bizarro Sephiroth, you have the two parties. Save for Sephiroth, you have just the three of you, people, and then Omnislash, just Cloud.
Yeah.
So basically, Cloud's been like, you know, he's comfort he has basically
isolated.
Is to rely on others, and Sephiroth is purposely trying to isolate him.
Yeah. As abusers do.
Yes. That is exactly it. Cloud is being isolated by Sephiroth, and Sephiroth succeeds in isolating him. And it's
in the Mind Void life stream.
And then that gets his shit out for it. I guess the other part of One Winged Angel stuff that we were talking about was more related to queerness.
I was thinking about that
part. Yeah,
we'll save it for another
episode. Yeah, we got another One Winged Angel stuff, but we'll save that for another episode. The Psycho motif is absolutely remarkable.
God,
and
I
cannot believe it. I mean, again, there's no other way to read it at that point, because it's fucking Psycho.
Yeah.
You know? It's the fucking Psycho shower scene.
Yeah, it's the Psycho
what
shower
else are you going to fucking... The Psycho shower scene, but it's Sephiroth and Cloud. And that's awesome. And I think that also just, you know, in terms of an emotional, you know, the emotions of having such a... having the song sort of represent their push and pull here is really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
I think really immersive and investing in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
So, back to Omnislash, though, which is the Omni... are we calling this episode just the Omnislash episode?
Probably.
I feel like we should.
Just Omnislash exclamation point.
I was going to say, just the Omnislash episode. That, too. So we've got, you know, again, kind of segueing off of that, the Sephiroth manages to isolate Cloud with each stage of the final boss, these three stages, the Cloud is proved more and more alone, which, again, as the users do, really good setup. What was it else that I wanted to talk about with Omnislash? Specifically Rape and Revenge.
Yes.
I wanted to specifically talk about the idea of Rape and Revenge with Safer Sephiroth. I made a note earlier. I was like, had an idea, but I didn't want to interrupt you. Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. So, the thing about Omnislash is, and we've already covered all the other stuff about it, so, there's a... The catharsis of it, you know, is undeniable, I guess, is a good way of putting it. And I just realized something now as we were talking.
Cool.
Yeah, too, that makes it really, really fucking good. The thing about Omnislash is that, you know, obviously... We've already got the you don't have control over me anymore because it's the last time you control Cloud. The game is presenting you with only one option, and it is basically it's a scripted fight.
Yeah.
You no longer have control. This is where Cloud is severing himself from Sephiroth and from the player. But that's obvious, but it's more than just that. It works as a specific rape and revenge, and like a good rape and revenge story, because it feels so... there's just, like, the catharsis of Omnislash, the actual act of Omnislash being just it's Omni-Slash, you know? He just goes ape shit on Sephiroth, basically. All Omni-Slash really is Cloud just running up to him and just fucking going off.
Yeah.
You know? It's just destroying him from every angle. It's a kill that has a certain amount of satisfaction to it, you know? Mm-hmm. But it is personal. Presented without judgment. It's presented as the right thing to do, you know? It's not like, oh, but is he actually just as bad as Sephiroth? Yeah. Because he killed Sephiroth! Oh, you know, like one of those things.
We live in a society, and yet we participate in it.
Everybody on Earth, and this is, I'm gonna just take this moment to fucking add everybody on Earth who is still, like, Nier's a bad person because he killed his rapist. That's really the hill you want to die on.
Oh, boy.
Yikes! But no, that's the thing, though, is that Omni-Slash has this energy to it of, like, you know, like, a fulfilling and this fulfillment of this anger and, like, catharsis. So it's more than just, you know, like, this ideal there, I'm gonna let it all go sort of thing. Like, Cloud's, like, while he is sympathetic towards Sephiroth in a lot of ways, he's still allowed to be angry at Sephiroth, and I feel like Omni-Slash really gets that anger out, and I think that, you know, he can let go of his anger after that.
Mm-hmm,
and I think you see that in, you know, subsequent stuff. He's definitely, you know, Sephiroth.
Yeah.
He's like, he feels bad for Sephiroth. He's always felt bad for Sephiroth, though. He did it during the main game. But yeah, no, he can let go of his anger, though, after that, but only after going apeshit on him and, you know, doing the you know, it's a rape and revenge, you know? That's exactly what it is.
It's
and
fantastic.
It's delight. This is a really good text that I sent July 19th, and it was, God, it's the PG and intellectually complex version of Rape and Revenge, like it was written by a woman and not a sexploitation film. I'm also high. I had to smoke another one out for Aerith. Please understand.
Smoke one out for Aerith.
The scene after Omni-Slash 2, like immediately after, which is like the only blood we see in game, is all... That's it. And again, it's tying again to the revenge part of this. Is that's the only blood we really see in the game, if I recall, is at the very end. It's after Cloud uses Omni-Slash on Sephiroth, who they're standing there looking absolutely fucking shocked with blood on his face.
Shocked.
You know, and it's definitely sort of that, like, I never thought you would fight back. I never thought that you were even strong enough to do this.
Right.
And Cloud's like, you know?
Fuck you, man.
Fuck you, man. And it's all very positive and
almost,
you know, it's very positive and heroic.
It's triumphant.
And it's great. Yeah, it's really, really good. And, you know, I think that I like how they followed it up too with you know, Cloud sort of being like, okay, Sephiroth, just chill out.
Yeah.
Relax.
Just chill out, Sephiroth.
Just chill out, please. You know, like, it's definitely the, you know, the in a sense, the end of the narrative for him and to sever himself from all those nasty feelings.
For sure.
Get that catharsis. And I think that also works too when you think that, you know, and I think it's implied as such, and I personally like to take it really hardcore into that magical realism zone. Again, because Cloud's a rather gentle man, you know, it might be kind of the fact that he would, you know, go apeshit and, like, you know, Omni-Slash someone like that. But I think the fact that it's in his mind sort of, you know, really allows for the revenge. The really intense, violent revenge should take place without the actual violence, you know, of it.
Who hasn't done shit like that in their mind?
Exactly.
Who would wrong them?
Exactly. That's, like, it's sort of like a heightened version of imagined scenarios you know.
Everyone imagines taking revenge on people who
exactly. And I feel like I think that it works so well as a rape and revenge moment because of that, because it's relatable.
Yeah.
It's taking those fantasies that we have of getting revenge on people who have hurt us
and taking it just that step further to this, like, magical realism, life stream, mystical level.
They could have just as easily done that in the main world of Half-Life 7. They could have just had Cloud literally just do that in front of everybody in the real world, but they chose to put it inside of Cloud's mind in this, like, other dimension.
Yeah.
Which makes it really, really personal.
It does.
It makes it incredibly personal.
It's a very intimate setting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a way, one could say that he's turning the it's like Sephiroth shows up to stab Cloud in the shower, and then Cloud takes a knife and stabs Sephiroth. That's what it is.
That's exactly it.
Sephiroth's like, you know, the psycho motif playing about to stab Cloud in the shower, and then Cloud takes out a knife and stabs Sephiroth before he can stab him. That's it. Yeah. That's it. That's exactly
what Final Fantasy VII ends.
That is exactly how Final Fantasy VII ends. And it's like, oh, thank God. And it's justified, and it feels good, and it's like, there's a personal, intimate level to it where you know, it's more than just, you know, the revenge too. It's him getting revenge in a very intimate way that is both violent and gentle at the same time.
Yeah.
It's very good. It's something that could only be accomplished with this very exact set of circumstances that FF7 has laid out for us.
That's exactly it.
What a good game! Oh, I love it so much. I'm gonna start crying. I'm sorry, this is just all I think about 24/7. Come to the extra credit session of this podcast to hear about my headcanons that just turn all of this somehow even up to 11. Let me tell you about my Nibelheim thoughts.
Oh boy.
I won't put those here.
You ever think about how FF7 just had, you know, just a throwaway line at the Nibelheim Inn with Zack, Sephiroth, and Cloud? There aren't enough beds.
And, I'm sorry, what? Like, they just the other guy, the nameless guy, comes in and says that. It's for like, no reason.
It's like, alright, thanks for the opening for my fanfictions. I'm not
there
sure.
There weren't enough beds, but there was just enough toxic queer confusion.
It's like, why would you say that to me? I'm pretty sure there are enough beds in that scene. Like, you can physically see it. I don't know if that was a translation error or what, but
I hope not.
I hope not. Because I love that just the random infantry dude's just like, there aren't enough beds. Yes, there are, dude. What are you talking about?
There fucking are enough beds!
What are you not talking about?
Yeah.
Unless.
Sephiroth is one big unless.
Yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't burn down all of Nibelheim.
Unless. Me making a reach theory at any time is like, huh, just kidding. Unless.
Oh, same.
Unless.
Oh, big same.
All of my favorite personal theories start out as, like, jokes with myself. It's like how people say you can't start shipping something as a joke.
Oh, you can't.
It'll become real before long.
Dude, Strycidos?
Dude,
I was like, oh, this would be good.
Me.
This is a great shoot.
Dude, I'm invested in Strycidos.
I'm so invested in Strycidos.
God.
Genesis writes.
Me making theories, I'm like, huh, can you believe this idea that just popped into my head? And then I think about it more for like 30 seconds. I'm like, oh no, I believe it now.
Same. Oh, 100%. That's
oh
all the
no,
best,
I believe it.
All the best theories are, oh no, I believe it. Much like all the best ships are, oh no, I'm shipping it.
I feel like that.
Is that what happened with me and Dimitri Fire Emblem?
Pretty much.
It's like, haha, he's hot. Oh no, I actually like him.
I feel like that moment has happened multiple times where I alone, at least, or we have talked to people.
Yeah.
And we, like, say a theory and then explain the whole thing. And I can't count the number of people who've been like, you know, when you first brought this up, I was like, there's no fucking way. But then you explained it, and I'm like, actually, you're right.
High five. We are so fucking smart.
Your hands are sweaty.
I know. I'm sorry. Ew. Well, we should probably be wrapping up here.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're about an hour and a half anyway.
There's a rest stop in a mile. We can take a pause and get everything situated.
Yeah. This is... I hope the sound quality turned out okay.
Yeah. Matt can probably fix it for us.
No,
Matt can fix it for
Matt,
us.
Matt,
right,
shout
Matthew?
Out to Matt being he really takes the bullet. He really takes the
every
bullet
day,
for us.
Every episode.
Every episode he does. Some of them I'm like, oh God, I feel really bad for him.
He's our MVP.
He is.
Or Steven. Alright, rest area is coming up. We're gonna take a break from our drive. Shut down the podcast.
Shut down the
podcast. I'm sure you would all love that, but not really.
Yeah, y'all want us to shut up at this point, I'm sure. Especially if you didn't want us to shut up at before, this episode probably did you.
Shut down the podcast.
Yeah.
Carlissa, shut down the podcast.
Shut down the podcast.
I will never shut down the podcast! But we will stop an episode so you guys aren't listening to us for like 8 hours.
Yeah.
So this has been the Ebony Ditch. I don't know what episode number. Who the fuck cares?
The Omni Slash episode. The Omni Slash
episode. I love you, Cloud Strife.
I love you, Cloud Strife. Sephiroth, you're valid and you're wrong.
Sephiroth, you are valid and you are wrong.
Thanks for listening once again, and as always, fuck you if you listen to this podcast.
Fuck you if you listen to this podcast.